right, so our next speaker is Catherine Santoro, and she also is having Claire Randolph come and help her. Catherine currently leads the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation's health policy portfolio. In this capacity, she conducts research and analyses on health policy issues in support of improving practices used by healthcare decision makers and industry leaders. Ms. Santoro received her master's degree in public policy and women's studies from the George Washington University and graduated cum laude with a bachelor's degree in political science from Villanova University.
Hello, everyone. I'm not Catherine Santoro. I am Claire Randolph. I'll be starting off this afternoon, and I just wanted to say thank you all for being here. I know it's been an incredible 4 days, and I feel like we've all been absorbing so much information, and this is the last breakout session, so I just really appreciate everybody being here. And neither Catherine or myself have any financial relationships to disclose. So the National Institute for Healthcare Management Foundation is a small, nonprofit, nonpartisan health policy think tank in Washington, D.C. I'm going to be providing just a brief background on the state of our healthcare workforce. And then my colleague, Catherine Santoro, will be sharing some interesting examples of how health plan foundations are investing and supporting the healthcare workforce. So changing population demographics of the United States will be increasing demand for physician services. The country is growing in size, and we're also growing older. And our large and aging population is also experiencing more chronic diseases. And across all health providers, there is really great concern about who is going to be able to provide primary care and long-term care. And experts are also predicting nursing shortages, despite recent increases in enrollments in nursing school and graduations from nursing school. So there's a lot of concerns. A lot of people mistakenly think that the Affordable Care Act is the main reason for the predictions of increase in demand for services and physician shortages, and this slide kind of illustrates that the ACA does have an effect, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on, but it's really the increase in the size and age of the population that's really driving a lot of the demand and predicted shortages. And the distribution, the geographic distribution of providers may actually be more critical to healthcare access than the actual numbers of providers in a given state. And while rural communities and inner city areas are most at risk for provider maldistribution, these areas are also more likely to have low income and or minority residents who are actually the ones that need primary care services more. So there's a disconnect there. And studies show that people are more satisfied with providers of the same race and ethnicity, and yet, despite some recent, again, upticks in medical school graduation, minorities are still underrepresented. So that's something that could be a whole other presentation, but it's just something that we do need to keep in mind. And this, in the state that we're in right now, Massachusetts, has the lowest rate of uninsured in the country and among the highest density of primary care providers in the country, yet you can clearly see that it matters where you live, whether or not you have access to these providers. And obviously, each state will look a little bit different, but each state does have sort of a similar maldistribution. And some states have, you know, the whole state is very rural and doesn't really have a lot of access. It's just one example. We mentioned the Affordable Care Act earlier, and it is truly the size and age of the population that's going to be increasing the demand, but this is APHA, and so we're going to talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act as well. So we know that with full implementation of the Affordable Care Act, millions of people are going to be gaining access to health insurance coverage for the first time. between 2011 and 2012 alone, 13 million people gained access to insurance. And latest predictions are that by 2016, there'll be another 25 million people who have gained coverage, which I can't help but kind of smile as I'm saying. That's very exciting. So obviously, with millions of people gaining coverage, it's reasonable to expect that there'll be an increase in demand for services. And women are expected to make big gains in coverage as a result of the Affordable Care Act, and we tend to use more healthcare services than men. And this is a Kaiser Family Foundation slide that we borrowed for this presentation, just showing that women use more services, and we also tend to have more than one provider. Children and minority groups are also expected to make big gains in coverage as a result of the Affordable Care Act. And so because of all of the newly eligible populations that don't have a regular source of care, all of this is going to lead to an increase in pressure and demand for healthcare services. So that's just a very brief kind of background, and there's no silver bullet or single intervention that's going to fix this issue overnight. We can't wave a magic wand and have more providers and equally spread out across the country, unfortunately. But health plan foundations, we think, are really uniquely positioned to engage in innovative partnerships and programs to support the future of the healthcare workforce. And health plan foundations are private, independent philanthropic foundations that have really strong ties to their communities, and they're already making grants to improve the health of people in their communities. And so we're really excited to kind of share with you some of these interesting efforts, and Catherine's going to share some of those right now.
Thanks, Claire. So we conducted qualitative research to understand how health plan foundations are investing in the healthcare workforce and to share that information and hopefully spur future investments or collaborations between foundations and other stakeholders in maternal and child health. So today I'm going to review. We found basically four strategies in our research, and I'll go through just a few examples, and we're happy to provide you with more information if you have questions about any of these. So one of the strategies we found is that foundations are really funding studies to really understand their statewide workforce capacity, to really understand the scope and the nature of the shortages in their state. So these are just two examples. In Arkansas, funding some consumer focus groups, physician office surveys, to understand access issues and to also help forecast the supply and demand for primary care physicians. And here in Massachusetts, funding a new survey as part of the online licensing application that will yield data to understand physicians by specialty in the state. Some additional examples is really to support the current and future healthcare workforce, and this is through scholarships, loan repayment, and preceptor programs to really help retain interest in medicine and kind of sustain the future generations. So these are just a few examples. In Arkansas, funding med students who have interest in primary care in the rural areas of the state. And then in North Carolina, there's a few different programs that they've been funding. One is targeting community practitioners who are otherwise not eligible for state and federal loan repayment options. Also in North Carolina, funding a preceptorship, which matches students with primary care physicians for 3 years, with a goal of really increasing those who are trained in the state of North Carolina to commit to primary care, as well as staying in North Carolina for their residency programs. They've also funded some online training and simulations for nurse preceptors to help nursing students transition to practice from school. Some additional examples are funding in Arkansas their first school of dentistry, as well as funding using distance education to help students obtain allied health degrees in the rural areas of the state. Another area that we found a lot of support for was for community health workers. And in Massachusetts and Minnesota, they've long identified these workers as important partners in healthcare delivery. And these two foundations have supported a lot of efforts in these states to really advance this type of this workforce. So here in Massachusetts, they funded this Association of Community Health Workers, and they really actually were instrumental through the Massachusetts health reform in helping enroll people in the state in health insurance, as well as connecting them to care. And in Minnesota, the funding there through their foundation has helped establish a statewide standardized curriculum for community health workers, which was the first of the kind in the nation, and I believe is still one of the only states that has reimbursement for community health workers in clinical settings under Medicaid, and that was all facilitated through some of this grant support. And there's a report from the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota Foundation on community health workers if you're interested in more information on that. A third area that we found is that foundations were supporting team-based care to really extend the availability of limited primary care providers and help different health settings attain accreditation as a patient-centered medical home so they can obtain the appropriate reimbursement for their efforts. And the last category that we found was a lot of support for safety net providers to continue operation of these clinics serving vulnerable populations, as well as to help retain providers who are working in those clinics by providing salary support. So some of the opportunities ahead that we found based on our research was that foundations can continue to help meet the future demand for some of the fastest growing occupations. This list is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So we would recommend that foundations think about scholarships, loan repayment, education and training around some of these specific health occupations. We also think it's going to be important to support ongoing analysis and evaluation of workforce capacity and working with the Health Resource and Service Administration on their data collection and to really kind of help leverage limited resources for data collection to the extent that the foundations can kind of help help support workforce-related databases. Another area is to really help promote strategies that will enable other types of health workers to practice at the top of their education and skill levels. Foundations can help play a role in facilitating discussions or serving as neutral conveners between the various stakeholders to help advance some of these scope of practice discussions. We touched on team-based care as well, but as you can see from this chart, there's definitely a lot of growth in the patient-centered medical home and expect to continue to see that going forward with health reform and the various investments through the Affordable Care Act. And finally, also just a focus on prevention and sustaining the public health workforce, and in times when federal funding is continuing to be cut and having budget issues, at the federal level, we think foundations can really help leverage and supplement federal funding to support public health workers and a lot of the programs that support vulnerable populations. So in summary, while we will continue to face potential shortages going forward, we really think this is a time of great opportunity given initiatives to help transform the delivery system and the payment system in support of team-based care and helping to address shortages. So we feel that health plan foundations will continue to be a critical partner and have had some impact on sustaining the workforce in their communities already. And we've brought copies of our brief that are in the back and hope that you all find it useful.